on all things EU. Keep calm and venture into the wasteland.
Welcome to the Geek Fallout Podcast, the news and discussion podcast for geeks by geeks. I should say the quarterly news and discussion podcast. We used to be weekly, but now we ain't. And we come back in a quarterly fashion. So I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. And joining me is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
Oh, it's going well, Chris. Like you're saying, when we were talking just a couple moments ago off air, it is summer, it is crazy, and I also can't believe, I mean, as we're recording this, it's end of July, it's almost August, and I mm-hmm. can't even believe it. If you ask me, you know, when I woke up and I'm still a little groggy, you know, what time of year do you think it is? I would say May. Yeah. It just doesn't seem like we're this far into the year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I guess everything's kind of just melded together between COVID, between, you know, what's going on with the weather. I know in my neck of the woods, a couple weeks ago, it's still happening in British Columbia and Saskatchewan, and just below us in the western United States, there's a lot of fires going on. And it all kind of came over a couple weeks ago to our province, and, we were smoked out. I went for dinner with the Trek 1701 crew. We all met up in Edmonton because our friend Ragnar, one of the co-hosts here on the network, was at a show in Edmonton, and we were sitting, we went for dinner and stuff, and we were standing outside the restaurant, and you literally couldn't see the tops of the skyscrapers because it was so smoky. It was crazy. It stuck around for the better part of a week. And 2 weeks prior to that, we had extreme heat. And then the southeastern United States, there's a bunch of flooding, and I know Europe's flooding. It's just crazy. And everything's kind of just all meshing together. It's rough.
It kind of shows what a small world it is, too. You mentioned the fires you had out there. Mm-hmm. We, a few days later, ended up having air advisories. Mm-hmm. If you're, have trouble breathing, if you have lung issues, if you have whatever, you shouldn't be outside right now. And you could see the haze over my entire area of New York. And it was because of those fires that you were experiencing and just the way that the air currents work for yep. North America. They came right carrying all that dust and embers and everything right over to my side of the country, of the continent.
No, it was crazy. I remember I want to say 2010, 2011, there were fires in Russia that the smoke came over and was covering us. It's mm-hmm. It's crazy how the weather systems work, that they can carry that so far. But here, they have this scale of air quality. And it's probably, I don't know if it's a universal scale, I'm not sure, but I know on the news they're saying if it reaches 7 on the scale, you're supposed to stay indoors. So during that whole time it was 7. So, it was kind of winter, you couldn't leave your house because you go outside, the air quality is so bad that, you can make yourself sick. Mm-hmm. And now COVID, it's getting out of control again, apparently, and ugh. But yeah, it just, everything just kind of meshed together, and yeah, it's hard to believe it's August, or going to be August here shortly. And Yeah, I just it's taken me by surprise that it feels like we should be in May.
Yeah,
but we're not.
And as weird as last year was, we thought this year would be, you know, normal or close to normal, and it's just not.
No.
Feel like I have multiple years worth of stuff happening in 1 year span.
Yes, that is so true. All right, well, let's get started. For this episode of Geek Fallout, unfortunately, we don't have Richard here. He's our tech guy, so we won't have a tech segment, because that's Richard's ballpark. But we will talk news, we will talk comics, and then we will get to our top five, which this week is our top five henchmen. So these are people that do a lot of henching, I guess. Like they're not the main bad guys, but they're the bad guy's right hand or left hand or whatever.
Lackey.
Yeah. Yeah. But before we do that, let's get into our news segment.
Oh shit. Incoming!
It was less than a week ago that Masters of the Universe Revelations debuted on Netflix, and it really created a lot of controversy on a number of levels. You know, a lot of people are hating on it. I've watched it all. Because I'm a huge He-Man fan. So much so that I created a new group on Facebook devoted to sharing He-Man pictures that I come across and stuff. But, you know, I watched this. I've been looking forward to it. It's only five episodes so far. And I liked it. Is it what I wanted? No. I would say, like, in that first episode, the first 90% of it was what I wanted. Like, it was cool. You know, Skeletor's attacking Grayskull, you know, He-Man, you know, has a sword, and one thing I love about this is the attention to details that they're focusing on. You know, because this is supposed to be I forget how they worded it. It's like a loving sequel to the original Filmation series. But as any He-Man fan knows, there was a lot of things that you didn't see on the Filmation series. Like a lot of vehicles, a lot of characters that, you know, were available in the toy line but never did make it to the screen on Filmation. So in this first episode, like, there was so much, you know, fan service, loving fan service, in the way of, you know, showing different characters, different vehicles, and all that kind of stuff, and it was fantastic. So I'll just go into a quick review, I guess. I got it listed pros and cons here. Pros: the animation looks great. The potential is there. For the most part, the voice acting is solid. I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. Liam Cunningham as Man-at-Arms, that's inspired. Mark Hamill as Skeletor, fantastic. So good. Lena Headey as Evil Lyn, again, inspired casting. She's perfect. It had a shocking ending, that first episode. Mm-hmm. A bit of a cliffhanger. And, you know, a lot of people are screaming, this is not, you know, this is not what I wanted. This is, you know, this is a slap in the face to He-Man continuity. I would argue and say the He-Man mythos is full of different takes. And I'm all right with this one. And by that, I mean, you know, growing up, when you bought the action figures, they had the mini comics inside, and the mini comics were all written by different people. There was no real continuity there. So you'd read these mini comics and then you'd watch the Filmation series and you're like, well, that it doesn't make sense. Like it's different. Likewise, there was the I can't remember the company that made them, but there was the He-Man storybooks, which I also collected as a kid, and they were different. They had different takes on, you know, on He-Man. Then there's, of course, the Filmation series. Then you had the New Adventures of He-Man, which was the anime-style He-Man series of the late 80s, early 90s. You had the 2002 He-Man series, which, in my opinion, is the best. I still think it stands up. I think it's fantastic. You had, of course, the Masters of the Universe movie. And now you got this, like... And then you got the comic books. You had the Marvel / Star comics. You had the DC comics. And currently DC is still has the rights again to He-Man.
They're no, all, Dark Horse.
Is it Dark? Oh, right. It was.
There's a limited series for this yes. Netflix series. They're doing like 4 or 5 issues, maybe 6. I forget. But yeah, it's Dark Horse.
Yeah. It was DC. Yes. But now it's Dark Horse again. Because in the last decade, 2010s to the 2020s, DC did, you had the Masters of the Universe teaming up with Superman and Batman. And, there's been so many different He-Man stories that don't coincide with one another. You know, it's not like Star Trek. I would say the Berman era Star Trek, where, you know, the Next Generation took place in the same universe as the original series, and Next Gen took place in Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise was a prequel, you know, like, they all kind of fit together. The different He-Man properties just don't, and this is just another He-Man property. So I'm okay with the different take on this. The cons on my list here, of course, as I said, it's not what the fans expected, and a lot of fans are upset about that. I'm not one of them, but I can understand what, you know, why people were upset. Sarah Michelle Gellar as Tila, I did not like that choice. I could not shake the fact that I was listening to Buffy. She's not, from what I understand, she's not known as a voice actress. Like, I know her husband, I'm assuming they're still married, Freddie Prinze Jr., he does voice acting, and a lot of times you can't even tell it's him. Whereas I it was Buffy. It's like, I can't get past this. Tila was too woke in this series, and I've just kind of found the men in the series are portrayed as either dumb or weak compared to their female counterparts, and that's kind of the definition of wokeness. And for the definition of wokeness, or woke, is a term originating in the United States that originally referred to awareness about racial prejudice and discrimination. It subsequently came to encompass an awareness of other issues of social inequality, for instance, regarding gender and sexual orientation. Since the late 2010s, it has been used as a general term for left-wing political movements and perspectives which emphasize the identity politics of people of color, LGBT people, and women. So there's like this trend now in Hollywood, and I'm just speaking as I'm not hating on women. I'm not hating on strong women. You know, I love strong women. You know, I think one of the greatest characters in terms of a strong woman is Captain Janeway of Star Trek Voyager. She was strong in episode one. She was strong at the end of the series. Like, she was fantastic. And it wasn't at the expense of making men dumb or weak compared to her, you know? To me, Tila kind of reminded me of Michael Burnham from Star Trek Discovery, you know, because that's kind of the way she is too, right? Like, she, you know, goes against men and makes men look dumb, and I don't understand this. Like, you can have a strong female character and not make, you know, and not at the expense of her male counterparts. Because I would argue and say the Teela from the original Masters of the Universe cartoon, the 80s cartoon, she was a strong female character. Like, she was, you know, saving Prince Adam a lot of times, and different characters. And I just found she was all about, you know, me, my feelings. You know, especially at the end of that first episode, like, that really rubbed me the wrong way. Like, spoilers. Prince Adam / He-Man dies. And just before he dies, He-Man's reverted back into his Prince Adam form, and Teela sees this and then realizes she's been lied to this whole time. And instead of mourning her friend and colleague, you know, when they go to tell the queen, her and Man-at-Arms, or I guess she's Man-at-Arms, her and Duncan, she gets, like, mad at them. Like, she's, like, getting, she's berating, you know, these grieving parents. Well, you know, King Randor didn't even know that his son was He-Man. And Queen Marlena, like, she did know, but not officially. And instead of, you know, being sympathetic, it's all about me, you know, and she, you know, gives up her position as Man-at-Arms and stops talking to her dad and storms out like a spoiled child. Like, I didn't understand that. Like, I was like, where is this coming from? Again, this is like the wokeness, you know, like, this is, in Star Trek Discovery, Michael Burnham, you know, creating a mutiny and getting her captain killed, getting most of her crew killed, starting a war. And then somehow at the end of the season, she comes out smelling like roses and she's, you know, given her commission again. Like, it makes no sense. And Teela, like, it's just too wokey. Like, it's too goofy. So, anyway, first, Kevin, like, you haven't gone through the whole series yet, but what are your take on it? What's your take?
You're right, not yet. Not that I don't want to, there's just not enough hours in the day.
Yeah.
I listened to two of Kevin Smith's podcasts, so, I mean, he's been talking about this for, feels like a year now.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how long it's been. It feels like it's been quite a while for it. And giving very tiny little updates or teasing updates for so long, like, oh, I'm going to be able to tell you guys something soon. And then it's, here's the theme music. I'm like, okay, it's good, but I wouldn't count that as, like, a big announcement, though. You know, and that's nothing against anyone that created it, but that's not what people were looking for. And he just stretched it out and everything for so long that part of me, I was like, oh, it's on. Oh, geez, it's finally here. I feel like I've heard about it for far too long, though, that I kind of don't want to watch it right away. Like, I'm not excited in the same way because I had a bit of overkill on it already. So watching the first couple, though, absolute love letter to, I'd say, the toys more so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the animation style is different. The plotting is different. Everything for it. But if you collected and played with the toys as a kid, you feel like everyone's going to be here eventually. Every accessory, every vehicle, every stupid thing is going to be on here.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun for it, too. Because you're right, there are numerous toys that we got that never appeared in the cartoon, yet they'd have random, you know, a random bad guy created for the cartoon. I'm like, why would you create people that you're not going to market as toys when this whole thing's a glorified toy commercial?
Yep.
And not use the ones you actually have.
Yep, exactly.
But you're also right. I mean, like, there hasn't been a consistency for He-Man Masters of the Universe ever. The toys are one thing. The cartoon is one thing. The comics, even the mini comics that were included, are something else. We really saw the difference of, I don't know, that someone doesn't have a clear, you know, concise vision for it all with the movie, which couldn't be more different. And then again, you're creating villains. You have dozens of them you could use. Why are you creating brand new villains here? Didn't make sense at all. And then suddenly we go into space and redesign the figures and everything, too, to try to get another year or two out of the franchise. But, I mean, He-Man has never been truly consistent. You just got to look at Man-at-Arms in the cartoon versus the figure.
Yep.
Doesn't have the mustache. That's day one here. They couldn't be on the same page.
Yep.
But it's also like, because we remember He-Man when we were younger and we remember growing up with the cartoon and everything, to see a new version of it like this, of course we're going to compare, but it is a new version. It's a version to get more people interested in the franchise. It's a version to get that concept out there again and make some money again and all. It's not there to be part two. I mean, yes, in spirit, I'd say it is. You know, hey, everything happened you're familiar with, but here's our different take on it. But I'm not viewing it as a continuation, because honestly, you go back and watch some of the original Filmation ones, they're terrible.
Yeah.
I have the nostalgia for it, and I enjoy it, you know, with my kid in mind still, but they're not good. And, you know, let's use the backgrounds over and over again. Let's reuse this animation of He-Man over and over again and just put, you know, something different next to him. You know, you can tell stuff that was done on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So watching this, I'm like, oh, you clearly spent a lot of money. You spared no expense. There's so much cool stuff going on here. When the Teela thing hit, okay, so He-Man dies, or, you know, but let's be fair, he's probably not dead, but for the purpose of the story now, Teela goes off on her own. I'm like, it wasn't a woke thing at all. I never thought that, but I was just like, is Teela a strong enough character to carry this? Because I felt like you never really did much with her on the show. You know, or like, I never felt like anyone really did anything with her. And maybe that's why they picked her. You know, she's a blank slate in a lot of ways for, other than Man-at-Arms is her dad, but that's really it. But I just thought, okay, this happened and that's who we're going to go with here. I think there could have been more interesting ones, though. And I'm fine with, like, the bad guy should look stupid. That's, if you want to do anything that's a spiritual successor for He-Man, dumb bad guys would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, constantly outsmart and all. And really, when, like, at least this cartoon did, Prince Adam and He-Man are of different size and stature, so you can believe someone wouldn't guess it. But going back to the original, they look the same. It's the same looking guy. How did one figure this out?
Yeah.
But I was taking it more as Teela felt the most stupid. Like, I can't believe I didn't see this. I can't believe this has been going on the whole time. I don't want to ever feel that way again. And maybe in her own journey there, I'm going to make everyone else feel how I felt. And you know, I'm not done yet, but that's my mindset for what she's doing, and I'm going to go along with it. And when I get to the end, and, you know, you mentioned there's five up now, there's five more to come, and so far that's, you know, it for it. But that first episode happens, and I still didn't know, because I tried to not look up, you know, spoilers or anything ahead of time for it, even though Kevin Smith's talked forever. He didn't really give away too much plot. But I'm like, you know, the sorcerer trying to find a new champion, that would be an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, in theory, Skeletor is gone here too. The bad guy's trying to find a new leader. That's an interesting story.
Yep.
And I just felt like Teela on her quest to find belonging, meaning, whatever, again, I don't know. I'm giving it a try. I'm not writing it off. And by then I might be like, oh, that was perfect. I totally understand why they did that. And that happens with many shows. I don't know where you're going for the first episode, but by the end, I'm so impressed you tied it all in together. So I'm willing to give a chance, but I was just like, her of all characters? Man-at-Arms gets fired in that first episode. What's he do now?
Well, and I found that strange. You know, like, he was just following his prince's command. Like, why would he be banished for that? But
it's a violent reaction to a violent thing happening, I guess.
I guess, yeah. See, what I would like to have seen, you know, it's kind of, I think you touched on it a little bit. So instead of her throwing a hissy fit, throwing her crown down or whatever, or command, whatever, and marching out, I would like to have seen her take over the Masters. Like, you know, like she's the man at arms now, you know, see her basically filling for He-Man. Like, you know, you're going to have to get all these guys together because there's still, you know, Evil Lynn's still out there. All the evil warriors are still out there. There's still threats to Eternia. Why not have her, you know, pick up the mantle? And then you get on this quest of, hey, maybe we can still save He-Man. Maybe, you know, that sort of thing. Like, but to have her go off on, you know, on the, whatever this quest is and having a hissy fit, like I just didn't like that. It too much of Michael Burnham, like that. That's what it reminded me of. But anyway, I have someone else that had a review on Facebook, and I actually reached out to this individual. His name is Shane Gibbs. He's from Australia, and he gave a review, which I think a lot of people agree with. There's a lot of people out there that share these same feelings. So I told him I was going to, I asked him if I could read this on the podcast, and he gave it his blessing. So again, this is Shane Gibbs. So this is what he had to say. So for many Masters of the Universe fans of the 80s or even the 2002 series who haven't seen Revelations on Netflix, avoid the new show as it is very, very different to what we expected or wanted. Pros. Great animation. This looks as good as anyone could hope. This is the kind of quality I love to see in cartoons, old school with but modern at the same time. The character designs, for the most part, update the characters' looks without getting too far away from their original looks. The voice cast is also great, though I wanted more of Mark Hamill as Skeletor. He was hardly in it. Sarah Michelle Gellar was miscast as Teela. Her voice doesn't suit this character at all. Cons. Pretty much everything else. Teela is the angry, whiny protagonist we never wanted. Overpowered, argumentative, surly, and cold. Drawn about as butch as possible, with a POC love interest to boot. The lawning gazes and such strongly suggest that it's just this, so it can't just be my imagination. Her greatest fear is even revealed to be how powerful and awesome she is. Seriously. Also see how she throws a fit when she finds out Adam is He-Man and chews out his grieving parents, the King and Queen of Eternia. Such stunning, much brave. Aside from Teela, the only other character who get much to say or do is Evil Lynn. Lena Headey was cast well, but they actually try to develop her character a bit, which is admirable, but only highlights how one-note Teela is. So yeah. You know, this series is very divisive. It's, you know, got a lot of people, you know, I'm kind of in the middle, to be honest with you. Like, I definitely see Shane's points, but I also see, you know, the good in this as well. I'm just glad that we're getting new He-Man content. And like I said, yeah. You know, like, there's no real established continuity. And, I mean, this, to me, this opens the door for future He-Man projects. Like, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I really like the 2002 He-Man series. It's so sad that Cartoon Network canceled it when they did. Like, they had a 4-year plan in place, and they were doing great. They were doing good stuff. You know, I'd love to see a He-Man series that kind of tries to integrate everything. You know, I would love to see some of the movie characters animated. You know, I would love to see Gwildor, you know, and Orko in the same episode. I think that would be awesome. But now that we have this series, you know, maybe we'll get more. But Kevin Smith, just to add on to the news of this, is got a lot of controversy following him. Like, especially if you go on YouTube, there's a lot of people calling him out. and he kind of did this to himself a little bit. Like, I like what he's done with He-Man. Like, it, to me, when I first heard this, I found it kind of strange. You know, if you told me that Kevin Smith was doing, like, a Daredevil animated series or a Batman animated series, I would have been like, that makes sense. You know, because he's a super fan. But I've never heard, prior to him getting this job, him talk about He-Man. Like, I don't remember that. So I kind of think he's just like an outsider coming in, you know, which is fine. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. But I just find, like, the people, you know, for example, the people that did the 2002 series, you could tell they loved the toys. They loved the original series. Like, there was a lot of a lot of love shown for all of that. And I know Kevin Smith has done the best he can, but again, I really don't think he was a fan prior to this. And where a lot of the controversy with Kevin Smith is now is, I think it was like a year ago, a little over a year ago, there was an internet news site, I want to say IndieWire, but I could be wrong, did a story where, like an insider that they talked to, using air quotes, said that the new He-Man series is going to be about Teela, not He-Man. Kind of like, again, Michael Burnham on Star Trek Discovery, where traditionally the star of a Star Trek show is the captain, whereas Michael Burnham wasn't the captain. She went from a first officer to a mutineer to like a science officer, and now she's a captain after season three, but whatever. So, it kind of was strange that you would do a show where your hero kind of gets sidelined. So they did the story, and they didn't, like, link it to Kevin Smith in any way. They didn't go at Kevin Smith or whatever. Kevin Smith found it, like, he found this article, saw it, or was told about it, and he actually tweeted a reply saying that it was a lie, that's not true. You know, He-Man's the star of this show. Now, you know, that it's been released, we find out, no, he's not. That whoever that insider was actually the truth teller, and Kevin was the liar. So he's getting a lot of flack for that. And at the same, like, I kind of understand where Kevin Smith's coming from. Like, at the time, he doesn't want rumors floating about, you know, the new show that he's developing. He doesn't want things getting out. Like, I get that, wanting to contain it. But don't attack people, you know? Like, don't call people liars when you are actually the one lying. You know, don't even acknowledge it. Ignore it. Just say, you know, like, maybe be cryptic and say, well, you'll have to find out when the show comes out. I know He-Man's in it, so that's all I can say. You know, something like that.
Well, there are people that will do stuff now. They'll say, you know, someone will ask them in an interview, well, is this happening? Is that happening? And if they're smart, they'll say, even if I could, like, even if I knew the answer, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
And they just leave it alone for that. One of his podcasts recently, they had on, I think he was the showrunner, head writer for Falcon Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And they're asking him stuff like Captain America 4 and what's coming out later and all. He said, you know, if I had an answer, I couldn't tell you the answer. So why are you even asking me these questions? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that worked out for it, because now he's not saying, oh, that's a ridiculous idea, and he's going to look foolish later.
Yeah.
So back to Kevin Smith, though, when it was first announced, and I don't know if it was like maybe just saying it, you know, because it's a very good paycheck for him. Mm-hmm. But he was saying He-Man Masters Universe was the toy he played with all time as a kid, had all time, enjoyed it. But it's before the time frame that people ask him about. People ask him how he got into comics, how he got to movies and all. They don't ask about the childhood. And okay. I thought, maybe. I mean, like, there's one stand-up special where he talks a lot about hockey, but otherwise there's hockey references sprinkled here and there throughout his work.
Yep.
But he doesn't, you know, you wouldn't know that he loves hockey as much because you hear about the comics, you hear about other things, but he doesn't bring up hockey as much. He will randomly make, like, heavy metal references. So it's clear that there's certain, you know, music that he likes, but it's never a part of anything for it. So I was willing to give benefit of doubt. I'm like, maybe this is something, you know, you're into even as a kid, and just it's never come up. No one's asked, so that's why we don't know. I was willing to give it a bit. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, clearly, whether it's him or whether it's someone else working on the show, just based on all the random stuff, like the land shark was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Someone loves He-Man, whether it's Kevin Smith or not, or someone else on staff. Someone absolutely loves it and is throwing everything there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, you know, like, this is just one series. This is one take. Like, you know, it's not to say that, you know, you're not going to get a more traditional He-Man series going forward. You know, and I don't know if I would want. Like I said, I really love the 2002 series because it wasn't corny. Like, there was some corniness there, but it was made for adults and children. And what I loved about it was that they built up the things. You know, like, that first... I think it was the first season, because they only did a season and a half. You know, like, you would have your Skeletor episodes, which were most of the episodes, but you'd also have your singular villain episodes, you know, Count Marzo, I can't remember the other ones. There was, like, a giant and all these other, you know, singular villains. And then they all come, you know, it pays off. Like, you know, like, they're establishing all these little things, you know, building up to the season one finale. You know, season two, we got the Snake Men. And then they were building up towards the Horde. You know, like, they were throwing, you know, references to Hordak and, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, King Grayskull. you know, like they were going places. So for anyone that, you know, doesn't like this series, and the animation was good too, like it was good. So anyone who doesn't like this, I would recommend, you know, tracking down the 2002 series, cause it's really good.
Yeah.
But this is good too. Yeah, this is good too. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not hating on it. It just could have been better. That being said, I did watch this video about Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It's the new Star Trek series that's coming out, featuring Anson Mount as Captain Pike, Ethan Peck as Spock, Rebecca Romijn is number one. They were in the second season of Discovery, and then they went back to the Enterprise. And so this series, the information this guy got on his video, it is going to go back more toward the traditional Star Trek, where you got your more one and done episodes. You know, they actually explore space, they meet new aliens. You know, you might get, it's going to be more traditional Star Trek, with a modern twist. I mean, the Enterprise definitely doesn't look like the Enterprise from the original series. It's very advanced, and it looks good, I think. So I'm hopeful, you know, like, with Strange New Worlds. I'm not exactly sure when it's coming out. I thought it was this year, but I still don't know definitively. But I'm looking forward to that. I really am. Because from what the information this guy was getting, you know, the people behind Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard are actually listening to the fans now and correcting some of the mistakes that they made for Strange New Worlds. So, fingers crossed. I'm hopeful. It'll be good. And finally, for my news, I just finished watching Bosch Season 7 on Amazon Prime. I really like Bosch. You know, I've said it's not the greatest cop show, but it's pretty good. You know, like, you know, it every season's good. The actors are great. The stories are good. It's an Amazon show, so I think, you know, like, you don't get like the huge car chases and explosions and stuff you might get, you know, watching Lethal Weapon or something, but It's good. I really like it. So I finished the season, and it kind of came to an abrupt end, and I was like, this is strange. Like, I thought this was the final season. It can't end this way. So I did some research, and I'm delighted to find out that it's the end of Bosch on Amazon, but Bosch is getting a new series on IMDb TV. I guess that's
really.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, it's in the States, and it's, I think, like Tubi, where they have like commercials.
Mm-hmm.
But it's free. So yeah, he's going to be moving there because I don't want to give anything away because his character, there's a change to his character at the end of the series. So his daughter is going to be in it, as well as Mimi Rogers as Honey Chandler. So as of right now, no other cast news has been released, but I imagine some of the other characters from the original Bosch series will be on this show in some capacity, because there are some storylines that I feel need to get resolved, or we need to find out what happens. So yeah, I imagine this will be next year because Bosch season 7 just came out. So, but from what I understand, Amazon owns IMDb. So,
maybe I'm trying to remember, cause my wife watched, Degrassi through the IMDb TV. Jeez, okay. That's tough to say. But she watched Degrassi through it, so I know it's commercials, but I forget. You're right that it was owned by someone else, because it was something like, oh, this is the deal we offer for free, but if you're part of our subscription service, this is what we have to. Maybe it was Amazon. It was so long ago, I don't even remember.
Well, I think Amazon owns it now. I don't know if they've always owned it, but I'm pretty sure, because that the news article that I saw this on, they were like, you know, will it still be called an Amazon original, or is it going to be an IMDb original, even though Amazon is paying for it? And I don't know how that applies to me up in Canada, because we don't get we don't have an IMDb app up here. Like, we have the app to look up stuff, but no, not watching.
No TV app for it, yeah.
Yeah, no streaming or anything. So I'd imagine it'll just be on Amazon up here, like, you know, because that's kind of what happens. But I was really happy because I love Titus Welliver, as Bosch, and, you know, and it, like I said, it's a good show. Is it the best cop show ever made? No. Is it the best show ever made? No. It's just good. You know, it's not the greatest. It's far from being the worst. It's solid. You know, like, I don't really know what else to say about it. I recommend it to everybody. All right, Kevin.
Yes.
Did you have any news you wanted to share?
Not that I can think of. For the He-Man one was big. Of course, we got like a little break from Marvel stuff, which is good because I'm still behind on everything. Again, that finding that pesky free time.
Yeah.
Just never comes.
Have you been able to watch Black Widow yet?
No, haven't even been able to do that yet. Because that one is not going to be a on my own thing.
Yeah.
That's going to be a family watch one, which makes it even more difficult.
Okay, so my question to you is, are you going to be watching it on Disney Plus, or are you going to the theater?
Whenever we're able to do it, we're going to do it on Disney Plus.
Oh, okay.
Part of it is we want to do it all together as a family. So there's mm-hmm. three tickets right there.
Yep.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it right. So we're going to get soda. We're going to get popcorn. We're going to get snacks. I'm like, all right, the $30 seems like a big chunk right away at the theater. Or, mm-hmm. sorry, you know, to pay online for streaming that we're already paying for.
Yep.
But in comparison to going to the movie theater, we're ahead.
Yep.
And we will be in our own house. We can pause if someone has to go to the bathroom or whatever. Like, it's not a bad deal. I understand why movie theaters don't want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few more movies on HBO Max I'll be watching before, because it's all going on HBO Max and theater in 2021, and then next year they're going to go back to theater first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from what I heard, the first week they did like $80 million, I think, at theaters, but they did $60 million on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
So
which they get to keep all yeah. of that.
Yeah. So I mean, it does suck for the movie theaters, and I feel for them, but at the same time, like with us in the like once COVID is hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, done, you know, we can get back to normal. But until then, you know, like I know like California, from what I understand, they're going back pretty much into lockdown again, because mm-hmm. Things are getting so bad. And it's just a matter of time. Like it's going to come up to Canada. It you know, usually the States gets hit first and then it comes up to us. So I'm hoping while this is going on, we can still do this. Like for myself, like I got it on Disney Plus, and same reasoning as you, because it's not going to be in my local theater till at the earliest in August. And so for me, like I'd have to do, you know, drive to the city, you know, 2-hour trip, you know, so I'm paying for gas and then like, you know, pay for the ticket, pay for the popcorn. And I'm just talking about going by myself. You know, yeah. I'm spending way over $30. So I figured I'll get on Disney Plus. I watched it because it came out the week my week I was at work. So I watched it after work and it was awesome. Like I really enjoyed, you know, watching it on Disney Plus. And then when I came home on my week off, my wife and I watched it together. And to be honest with you, like I don't want to speak too much of it. I thought it was better on the second viewing, you know, and that's the nice thing about Disney really? Plus is, cause I think what happened, it's kind of like, I think what happened with some of the He-Man fans, you know, like I had an idea in my head that I thought they were going to do for this movie and they didn't do it. So I was disappointed initially, but then when I watched it the second time, I caught things I missed the first time around. You know, my wife really enjoyed it, and seeing her, you know, laugh and enjoy certain aspects of the movie brought up my enjoyment. So it was nice. Like, you know, of course you pay the $30 or whatever. And I actually had like a credit because I ordered mine through iTunes or Apple, whatever. And I ended up getting $5 off, which was, you know, so it was only like $26 I actually spent. You know, I got to watch it with my wife a second time. And I can watch it anytime I want, really. Some of the, you know, things that the fans didn't like, I was okay with. I enjoyed it. It was a good film. Shang-Chi, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to be doing this with Shang-Chi. I think...
Is that August? September?
September.
September. The way it's going, I think they will.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, with the variant kind of getting out of control again. Yeah, I think this is the way it's going to be for a little while. And I'm okay with that. Because the Marvel movies, like, for me, I always make a special trip for the Marvel movies. Like I said, I don't wait till my local theater gets it because it's always like a month later. So I go to the city. So I always make a special trip, either opening weekend if I have that weekend off, or the following week when I'm off. I just avoid spoilers and then I go in. Because yeah, I'm a Marvel, and I'm an MCU fan. So you know, as long as they keep doing this, I'm gonna keep getting it. But that being said, when Black Widow does come to my local theater, I think I'm still gonna go just to support the local theater.
You know, fair.
You know, just because like I can literally walk down the street to get there, walk a couple blocks. And they're struggling, you know, like with the pandemic and stuff. Like they my local theater, they would have like popcorn sales because they weren't actually allowed to show movies. Because of the COVID restrictions that our province had. So they couldn't show movies, but they would have popcorn sales. Like, they would have popcorn sales Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. No, Friday nights and Saturdays. And, I'd make sure on my weekends off to go there at least one of those nights to just get popcorn, just to, you know, support them. Because I don't want to see our theater close. You know, I have a lot of fond memories of our local theater. Last thing I want to see is theaters go out of business. You know, kind of like the comic book stores, you know. I hate seeing comic book stores close, but...
No, to my knowledge, none of our local theaters did that. I know some around me later on, not initial shutdown time, but later on would do a party or a family could rent out an entire screen, and it wasn't that expensive either. Like when you would think, oh geez, how much would that cost me? I think most of them would do it for $100, and I said, that's really not bad.
Nope.
You know, like that's a good idea for a kid's birthday party. But I know that helped a lot of them. I never ended up doing it myself. There wasn't anything we arranged. There wasn't anything that I was interested in that, you know, other people were hosting.
Yeah.
But at least it was something. It was some revenue.
Yeah. Well, with the restrictions that we had here in Alberta, they couldn't do that. They couldn't actually have people sitting in seats type of thing. So they had the popcorn sales. I want to say before the restrictions, like last year when COVID was still, you know, a year ago, but there was no movies coming out, they would show older movies. I don't know if Disney wasn't letting them or whatever, but it was mostly like if there was a superhero movie, it was a DC movie. Like they just couldn't get the Marvel ones for whatever reason. I imagine probably because of Disney, but yeah, like our local theater, it's been here since the 50s. And it went through a couple of renovations in the last 20 years, and it's a new family that just bought it like a year or two ago. So I just hate to see it go out of business. I'd hate to, you know, see that family, you know, lose their livelihood. But anyway, let's move on to our comic news. So for this week, I have a couple things, and then Kevin, if you have anything, of course, please chime in. So like going through my Comixology app, the last couple weeks, like I've been so busy that I haven't actually been reading my weekly comics. So I'm way behind, but something I noticed this week is DC is bringing Milestone back.
Yep.
So I got the first issue of Icon and Rocket, Season 1. It's ages 13 plus, written by Reginald Hudlin, art by Leon Chills. To be honest with you, because Milestone came out, I want to say early 90s, right around the same time as Image and...
maybe a year behind, but real close.
Yeah, and all the big events, like the death of Superman, all that kind of stuff. But I don't remember, because I used to get, back then, I used to get my my comics from the spinner racks. I never really went to a comic book store. Maybe once a year I got to go. I don't remember Milestone being on the comic book racks. So I never got into Milestone. All I knew is Icon and Rocket. Like, Icon was basically like a black Superman, essentially. But Milestone, from what I understand, is like African-American creators writing African-American characters for comic books. So, I mean, that to me, that's awesome. That's phenomenal. So I was never into, like I said, these weren't on the spinner racks in where I bought my comics, so I never got into them. But I knew of them. I think it's great that DC's going back and you know, showcasing these characters again. Because I find with DC, like, a lot of the newer issues and stuff, like, everything's black label now, like, pretty much. Like DC's basically, for the most part, said, you know, continuity, fuck it. We're just doing stories. Some stories will, you know, be continuity with other stories. Some won't. You know, they're basically just kind of letting their creators, in my opinion, have free reign, which I think is awesome. I think that's really cool. And I like the fact that they're bringing stuff like this back, like, you know, stuff that I never got to experience the first time around. Kevin, what are your thoughts?
Well, you're right about first time around, and it wasn't anything against them, but I would say just the way marketing happened at the time, and they were, you know, pretty well marketed, mm-hmm. but me in the early 90s, I wanted my flashy Image books,
yes.
even though many of them were garbage, you know?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't get the Milestone, but from what I've done over the years, like, Static is clearly the biggest character mm-hmm. for Milestone.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't get the respect. Like, Static had a cartoon, popular one at that. It's the only Kids WB cartoon that never got a DVD release, which is a little ridiculous. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you start wondering, well, do we know, you know, can we kind of put pieces together here and figure out why it never got one? Maybe. No one's ever going to say that, you know, on the record, but maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It even had a spinoff, Zeta Project. It was a cartoon for a while, and that didn't get anything. They did, I feel like it was early 2000s now, Justice League. All of the Milestone characters showed up for like 2 or 3 issue little crossover thing, just to kind of, I think, as a, hey, remember we're here. And does anyone have any interest in us still? But now coming back here, the thing is, they've always been like to the side, like I've never felt like they're in DC proper, almost like what they do with the Wildstorm characters. You know, we'll mm-hmm. use them when we need to, but otherwise they don't exist. And I feel like they kind of pull the same thing with the Milestone ones. Even Static was in Teen Titans for a little while, even.
Yeah.
So they should be more established, but they're just not, and it's a shame. And unfortunately, like, I like it, I appreciate it, I think it should be there more, but we were talking about it, I guested on Wizard's podcast recently, and we were talking about the Milestone debuting.
Yep.
And the marketing and how we're different and trying to bring a whole new audience into comic stores, and I thought, if anything, they shouldn't have brought the new audience into the comic stores. They should have brought the comics to that audience. Sell it in record stores. Sell it in clothing stores. Like, mm-hmm. don't sell it in comic stores. The audience for these books are not hanging out in the comic stores. Yeah. They're over here, so bring the books to them. And I kind of still think they should have done that, maybe do it again now. But I overall, my feeling is, like, I have no faith in DC. I have faith in Milestone. I have no faith in DC to actually do anything with it other than a contractual obligation to print it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also why I don't get too invested, because I'm like, it's going to go away soon. It's happened before, and it'll happen again, and you guys are going to just say the sales are bad because you put nothing behind it. They don't own it, but they seem to have some sort of deal where I'm shocked Milestone hasn't gone elsewhere by now. you know, see if someone else will print up, you know, more copies for you or get you in front of more eyes. And so I feel a bit, but they're good comics. You know, they're good stories and all, good characters, but for what they're going for, they need to be bigger than they are. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know that DC's the answer for that.
That is true. Yeah, they must have some sort of, like, copyright, like, they have to use them, or that, you know, lapses or something, like what Marvel...
Oh, I'm sure about that, yeah.
Yeah, well, like, what Marvel used to do with the, like, the original Human Torch.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, no, I haven't read it yet, but I'm gonna check it out, you know. But, yeah, it's crazy when you think of how many interesting characters that DC Comics actually owns that they do nothing with. Or when they do something with it, it's not done right and it just kind of fizzles out. Like every time they try and like bring Wildcats into it, you know, they call it Wildcore or whatever. And it just kind of like, you know, like you have these interesting characters that you could do something with, but you just don't.
Well, even like, I mean, a little later in the 90s, but Gen 13 was the most popular comic in the world, it seemed, for a while.
Yep.
And then nothing's ever happened with them since.
Yep.
Is it they're just a product of the 90s and they're kind of stuck there? Maybe, but I mean, Power Man and Iron Fist was definitely a product of the 70s, and Bendis found a way to make them cool again.
Yeah.
Like, it can be done.
Yeah. Well, I remember when they did the New 52, Fairchild was in something.
Superboy, maybe? Superboy, he had, like, a team or something going on, I think?
Yeah, I can't remember. And, yeah, well, like, apparently Grifter's in Batman now. So I guess that's kind of cool. Like, you know, I guess he's fitting well with the Batman universe, but...
Well, and one of the things that he said for Wildcats specifically, but I mean, all that Wildstorm stuff kind of got tied in together. How do you do a story of this longstanding alien race war, but that somehow has not touched anyone else in DC?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you have this, oh, it's been forever and there's superheroes involved in these giant battles and... Here's the good aliens and the bad aliens. Okay, but if it's in DC, why didn't Superman show up to help? Why didn't Flash? Why didn't freaking anyone? Booster Gold? Like, how has this just been contained to your Wildcats characters? And yeah, that's a tough one to figure out. But I think just don't do Wildcats. Just take the individual characters. Grifters in Gotham. Okay, that probably works. You know, take like your Checkmate and your Amanda Waller, and she has a Team 7. She has a covert team. Okay, that would totally work. Like, there's ways to break open these ideas and fit the pieces in better places there in DC. And honestly, go back, I think there's a way to do it for Milestone 2. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't happened.
Yep. Yeah, and, well, like, with the New 52, they tried bringing the Daemonites into... Superman, like that the Daemonites were like enemies of the Kryptonians, and what's the Daemonite, the main bad guy? I can't remember.
Lord Hellspot, I think.
Something like that. But he was in
a few. God, I can't remember. I had it in my head.
Yeah, he was in a few issues of the new Superman, like the new 52 God, Superman.
I forgot about that. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And then they just dropped it. Like, you know, it's like, nah, we're not gonna do that anymore. And Voodoo had her own series when, you know, and Grifter when New 52 started, and those just died on the vine. Like, just frustrating, because I love those characters from the 90s. Like, there's such potential.
Yeah, they did Stormwatch for a little while, like integrated some DC people in, but it was there. And honestly, with the JLA Watchtower, Stormwatch, it makes sense. That's an idea that should exist in DC.
Yeah, yeah. And having Martian Manhunter on there, I thought was brilliant.
Yep. Absolutely. And then nothing.
Yeah. But anyway, speaking of DC, in my other comic book news, remember a few years ago they did Batman 66?
Yep.
You know, it was the Adam West Batman continuation in the comic books. Now they're doing Batman 89, which is a 6-issue series beginning in August, written by Sam Hamm and art by Joe Quinones. I'm not sure who these creators are, but judging by the page that I seen, it looks pretty good. I never did read the Batman 66 comic books, but Batman 89, that's my jam. You know, I love that Tim Burton Batman. you know, so I'd be interested. Like, I know, you know, they say that, you know, the Val Kilmer, you know, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, that's the same continuity. In my mind, it's not. You know, it had some similar, you know, it had some of the same actors, but, you know, the same Alfred, same Commissioner Gordon. But in my mind, you know, when Tim Burton stopped directing them, it kind of became different. So for this series, Batman 89, I would love to see, you know, their take on some of the Batman villains that, you know, we didn't get to see.
Well, that's one of the that's one of the cool things they've already announced for it. They're going to have Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face.
Yes, I was going to say that. Yep.
Yep.
That I'm looking forward to, because I remember as a kid watching Batman 89, and then, you know, when they're talking about him being Harvey Dent, I'm like, that's Two-Face. He's going to be Two-Face. And then we never seen him again.
No.
Billy Dee Williams did the voice of Two-Face, I want to say, in Lego Batman.
So I think Lego Batman, and I think because they've done DC does all those direct-to-DVD animated movies.
Okay.
There is a Batman one where he's also the voice for Two-Face, or maybe it's coming up, but he's going to do it a couple times, it sounds like.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm super excited to see Billy Dee Williams' Two-Face, and, you know, I don't know who else I'd want to see. You know, someone as a Scarecrow, maybe. With the Batman 89, or sorry, Batman 66, they did, when they were doing those animated movies with Adam West and Burt Ward, they did two of them, and they had William Shatner as Two-Face in the second one. And that was just brilliant. I thought that was so awesome because, you know, like, Shatner was an actor during that time. You know, he was doing Star Trek. Adam West was doing Batman. You know, it totally makes sense that, you know, Shatner would be cast as Two-Face in the 60s. And I loved that. I loved that little touch. So, yeah, for Billy Dee Williams coming back as Two-Face, I'm super stoked about that, even though it's in a comic book. But yeah, I love that original, or that 89 Batman film. But anywho, that's all I got for comic stuff. So let's move on to our main topic, our top five.
Now it is time for our top five.
So for this installment of Geek Fallout, our top five is henchmen. So these are the guys that, you know, are not the main bad guys, but, you know, they're helping out the main bad guys. They're doing, you know, they're doing the tough work sometimes. So the way these countdowns work is we start at five and we go to our number one. So Kevin, who is number five on your list of top five henchmen?
All right. So I debated if I was going to start with them or end with them. And I think I'm going to start with them just for the joke and all for it. But, and it's two, I keep saying them. It's two, but they go together here for henchmen. So I'm going to start with from Venture Brothers, Henchmen 21 and 24, who are henchmen to the Monarch, and as the series progresses, end up with their own incredible stories. and change and grow. And I really think when the show started, they were just, I think the show writers said, oh, it's a henchman, they all have numbers, and that was as far as they thought. But I feel like the voice actors made these two characters come alive and be enjoyable, and they thought, we like playing with these characters, let's do something more with them. And I'm behind on Venture Brothers because they take like 5 years in between seasons. And then by the time it comes, I'm like, I have to rewatch all of it to remember where we were in the story. So it takes me a while to get through anytime there's new stuff. But the original couple seasons, these henchmen, like, I would quote lines they say. There's just so much ridiculous stuff. They're so fun. They're goofy. But then they get into the serious stories. I thought, you know, that's kind of everything I want a henchman to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Monarch's a great goofy character too, because I think to have a henchman you really like, you need to care about their master or, you know, their boss as well.
Nice. All right. Number 5 on my list. And this was a tough one. I was like, well, it was a tough one, but it wasn't a tough one. And that's Maximilian. From the movie The Black Hole. He's this big, giant, red robot. One of my favorite movies of all time. He's the robotic henchman to Dr. Hans Reinhardt. You know, like, he's willing to kill. He's seemingly evil. He's got that glowing red eye, that cyclops eye of his. And yeah, he did kill... I can't remember the character's name, but he did kill one of the main characters with basically a spinning saw. And yeah, the reason why I was hesitant to put him on the list is, I mean, he was a good henchman. You know, he did Dr. Reinhardt's bidding. He was created by Dr. Reinhardt. But in the end, he did leave his master slash creator to die. You know, like when the bridge started collapsing and the view screen fell on Dr. Reinhardt, and Reinhardt was calling out for, you know, help me, help me. Maximilian just peaced out. Like, he just left, you know. I guess he had enough of Dr. Reinhardt's failing, you know. He was just obsessed with killing the crew of the Cygnus, I guess. So, yeah, number 5, Maximilian, the red giant robot. Kevin, number 4 on your list.
All right. I am going with... I'll count as a henchman or a henchwoman here. But I'm going to go with Lex Luthor's personal bodyguard and chauffeur, Mercy Graves. Now, she was originally created for the cartoon, much like Harley was originally created for the Batman cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when it started, I thought, this is an interesting character. This is really cool. How do I not remember this character in comics? Well, because she didn't exist in comics. She'd never appeared there, but she proved popular enough. They eventually brought her over. It took a few years, but eventually brought her over for it. And I just always thought the idea of Lex Luthor, for all that he is, and antagonizing Superman and other heroes all the time, one, that he decides to get a bodyguard anyways. Chauffeur, totally. Makes sense.
Yeah.
But then he gets a bodyguard. I'm like, you're Lex Luthor. You have this giant, you know, ridiculous suit of armor you could put on here to fight bad guys. You also tick off the bad guys, and you have a random normal human here as your bodyguard. Then, honestly, the way I was thinking of Luthor at the time, I'm like, would Luthor pick a woman? And I wasn't sure. You know, I really debated on it. I was like, for all that he is, would he pick a woman? And I just went with it. I still don't quite have an answer. Kind of just depends on who's writing him, really. Mm-hmm. But then the fact that she can actually, you know, there have been times where he gets here and fight, and she can actually kick some ass. And for most of the day-to-day stuff Luthor would have to deal with, I'm like, she could absolutely take out anyone. Normal day-to-day stuff he might have to deal with, you know, someone coming after, you know, another normal human coming after him. But then they'll do scenes where she just steps right up to a superhero, just absolutely no fear, no regard for herself, really nothing. Mm-hmm. It's almost like she knows, hey, there's a superhero code, so I know you're not going to hurt me, or at least not that bad. And I have a job to do, and I'll step right up. But what honestly could have been a nothing character otherwise, I'm like, this is part of my Luther mythos now. There's certain mm-hmm. things that Luther always has to have in my mind in any incarnation. And even though he's been around, you know, since Superman was first around, and here's this character on the cartoon, like probably 60 years later. Yeah, it's added to his story now. I just thought she's such a cool addition. And I kind of feel like some writers will play up, like, is there more between them? I don't care. That's not what she's there for. Like, I'm not worried about, you know, if there's a romantic thing for it. Yep. It's Luther. He shouldn't be tied to any one person. He should be tied to whatever, you know, furthers his goals, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just always thought she was so cool. And I mean, Harley became the star of, you know, created for an animated series, and mm-hmm. Mercy never really got her due. But, you know, they started out pretty similar, though.
Yep. Excellent. Number four on my list is The Mountain. And that is Sir Gregor Clegane. He's a henchman to Tywin Lannister in A Song of Ice and Fire. Also Game of Thrones. He's often referred to as Tywin's mad dog. So when Tywin needs some killing done, he sends The Mountain. And in the book, The Mountain is way bigger. But, I mean, what's his name? Bjorn, I can't remember his last name. The guy who plays The Mountain in Game of Thrones, that guy's huge. Like, he really is a mountain of men. But in the book, he's actually he's bigger. So big that, like, you know, the horse that he rides is, like, big, too, because it has to be in order to carry him. So, yeah, he's often referred to Tywin's mad dog. He's referred to as the mountain that rides. And yeah, he's just the biggest, baddest dude that you never want to come across. And in the show, like, he becomes like a zombie and everything else, which was interesting, you know, because he becomes a henchman to Cersei. But I prefer him before that, like when he was Tywin's mad dog. And he's also done some pretty unspeakable things, you know, killing people, you know, ripping people's heads open with his bare hands, killing babies. That's not good. But he does it because his lord commanded it, and he's a loyal henchman. So number four, The Mountain. Number three on your list, Kevin.
So, you know, what's been interesting. Sorry, just side note. I don't really know where to put it in on here. But when you look up, like, henchmen, the amount of things that people count that are absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know, for an example, because I was looking up stuff when you brought up this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I would see people say, well, the Penguin. I was like, the Penguin's not a henchman. What do you mean? Oh, because Joker and Penguin teamed up and he's second. I was like, that's not what this means at all.
No.
No, that doesn't fall into it. So when I'm thinking of henchmen, I'm thinking of, like, a gun for hire in a way. You know, you get people to do the dirty work for you, and whoever the main bad guy is can stay clean.
Yeah.
Also, you know, like, sort of a mercenary attitude. They are only out for themselves as well, so they might screw people over. They might go for the highest bidder or whatever. And I just couldn't narrow it down to one. I tried, but they're so much fun when they're actually get going in the comics or cartoons and all. I'm going to pick the Dreadnoughts from G.I. Joe.
Nice.
But just when, like, I was debating Major Blood, I'm like, he's not really a henchman. I was debating Destro. I'm like, no, that still doesn't count as well. I was like, what's that? And like, what, a random Viper or Cobra Trooper? That's not right either. But the Dreadnoughts absolutely fit the mode. they're for hire. They will do whatever you want. They will, you know, go to space and wrangle the, you know, giant space monster things that were teddy bears when they went up.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, most ridiculous G.I. Joe episodes. Always recruiting, so you always get new members that are just as ridiculous and absurd, too. You get, you know, episodes where Zartan is the leader for them will just flat out screw everyone over and say, no, this is where the money is. It's where I'm going. And that just makes it more enjoyable, too. Like, I kind of don't feel, I feel henchmen should be tied to someone, but I always like a little bit of, you know, how loyal are they? Like, it makes them interesting characters, too. But, God, I just, Dreadnoks were so ridiculous. I think my favorite G.I. Joe episode ever is the Cold Slither one, where they form the rock band. And it's one of the first comics I remember reading before I was even into comics. Because when we, and I'm not totally sure what you had on TV there, but they actually did commercials for the G.I. Joe comics. They would just be like, you know, a random commercial for, you know, toys, cereal, whatever. There were commercials for the G.I. Joe comics as well, and they were animated too.
Interesting.
And I have one of them that was the Dreadnoks are all on the cover, and this real, like, they almost had it, they almost got G.I. Joe, and then they peace out and sneak out of town as quick as they can do. But it was, you know, the G.I. Joe one was one of the first comics I saw before really being into comics too. And it was just, it's the Dreadnoks. It's being cool. It's comics, so it's a little more violent. You really thought anything could happen. People could die, which they did in that comic and not in the cartoon. But I will stop every time I see that cover to this day. My local comic shop had it up recently. It was like, it's like a $5 book. It's not an expensive one or anything. And I'm like, I know I have it, but I'm tempted to get another one just because I have such fond memories of these characters. They just did what was it, Super 7, I think, one of those companies that does the ridiculously overpriced action figures, but they look so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever company just did the Destro one, and they also did like the pimp Destro version too, with a leopard print and everything. They have a Zartan one, and it color changes, and you can remove, you know, his headpiece and all, and change his look and everything. I thought, oh, geez, like, really, you know, playing up the whole Master of Disguise idea for him. I was like, oh, I cannot spend money on that kind of figure. That's a bad path to go down.
That is an excellent choice. Like, I do love those characters. And I must say, like, I didn't say, you know, I did, like, when I came up with the topic, I did not say there were certain parameters you had to follow. Just whatever you consider a henchman. So for me, like, having Maximilian on here was tough because he does in the end kind of betray his master, right? Whereas I was thinking, but because, you know, the fear factor in me as a kid, I just, you know, I just loved him as a villain. But when I was picking the other ones, I was going for loyalty. Like, I was going for, you know, like a hench, you know, because I was thinking of myself, if I'm a villain, you know, do, you know, as much as I like the Dreadnoughts, would I want them as henchmen? Because they, you know, again, like you said, they, you know, they'll betray you for a higher bid. So I'm going to actually skip my number three right now and go to number two, because it fits in with your number three.
Okay.
Because you're listing off characters, so I went with number two, Storm Shadow.
I did debate that as well.
Because he's Cobra Commander's ninja bodyguard, and that guy, you know, he, you know, you need protecting. He's there, you know, and he's loyal, and you know, like, and a lot of times you don't even know he's there, you know, so. You know, if I'm a villain, that's what I'm looking for. You know, like someone who's good at what they do and at the same time are loyal. So Storm Shadow, that is my number two. Because I like you, Kevin, I'm a G.I. Joe fan. So I was going through who's the best, you know, like I love, as much as I love Destro, he's an independent contractor, right? Like he's, And he's sold out Cobra Commander before. Same with Baroness. She's sold out Cobra Commander. Major Blood, I would say, is pretty loyal. But I'm pretty sure when Serpent Serpentor showed up, he threw behind him pretty quick. Same with, well, of course, Dr. Mindbender created Serpent Serpentor, so, you know, he's not loyal. But Storm Shadow, as far as I can remember, has always been there for Cobra Commander when he needed him. So that's why I went with him. So I'll backtrack and go with my number three now. And this was an interesting choice because, you know, again, like, when I came up with this topic, like I said, I didn't, like, it was just one I threw out there. I didn't really give it much thought until I actually started thinking about it. And I'm like, well, if I'm a bad guy, I need people that are loyal. I need, you know, and they, you know, they need to believe in their master and all this other stuff. One character out of all the MCU that I think is the most loyal henchman is Ebony Maw.
Ooh.
The MCU version. He's a loyal disciple to Thanos. He's completely loyal. Like, that guy, he, you know, Thanos is his Jesus Christ. Like, he worships Thanos. He believes in Thanos. He quotes Thanos. Completely loyal. Plus, he's also super smart. He can reverse engineer anything. He's super smart. And he's magic capable. He has, you know, he can levitate. He can go toe-to-toe with Doctor Strange. You know, like, he's got it all. He really does. And like I said, he was completely loyal to Thanos. Like, out of all of the children of Thanos, I think he was the one that really was the most loyal and loving of his master.
So he's an absolute scene stealer in those movies, too.
Yeah.
Much more so than the rest of Thanos' group.
Yeah. And I emphasize the MCU version because the comic book version of Ebony Maw has betrayed Thanos. Whereas the MCU version never did. He was pretty darn loyal right until the end.
Both times.
Literally both times. Literally the second time he's reaching out to Thanos, like, you know, when he's dying. All right, Kevin, number two on your list, sir.
Okay. So I was also going for, when I was thinking about these, someone memorable too. Like I said before, mm-hmm. with Dreadnoks, I didn't want to pick like random Cobra Trooper, you know, the little army builder characters and all.
Yeah.
They don't mean anything. They're just there. You want someone memorable. So I was trying to think of someone so memorable that it's quoted, it's part of the storyline of the movie, even though not the main bad guy. But, you know, some people might say steals the show and becomes the main bad guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going with Count Tyrone from Princess Bride with his six fingers.
Interesting.
He is a henchman. He is the second, but he becomes the bigger, tougher or more intimidating villain than Prince Humperdinck, really, along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Humperdinck just gives up, pretty much, but the Count here, they have to actually defeat. Well, Ego Montoya has to defeat him, but he has to actually be defeated. Whereas, you know, Prince Humperdinck just kind of flakes off, pretty much. No. But, I mean, that's, you know, there's your movie quotes for people that love Princess Bride. There's something memorable right away. It can be parodied so easily. And yeah, he's supposed to be the second, but absolutely steals the show throughout it. And again, loyal as well. Like you're saying, not a bit of it is him screwing over the prince or going behind him or anything. If anything, he's pushing the prince on, goading him on too. And there, you know, I just gotta say, I would say he's a henchman But as I say that, there is a big difference. I can't think of a proper word right now. Advisor, maybe. Like, there is a difference between the lead villain's henchman and, like, an advisor. I'm thinking...
like, consigliere.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, in The Sopranos, Silvio was Tony's...
Yeah, like... Yeah, and, you know, and frequently it's the character that's, like, you know, in the shadows, in the basement, working with the dark arts, whatever it might be. Like, not a henchman, but plotting stuff behind the scenes to get what they want, too.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, Kevin, I'm going to ask you what your number one is first before I go with mine, because I'm afraid... I might step on your toes with
really.
Depending on what you choose. Depending on what you choose. So I just because for my number one, I have to reference other henchmen in that same realm. So I don't want to step on your toes if one of those henchmen happens to be your number one.
I don't think so. It's possible, but I don't think so.
Okay.
But for number one, and I. We talked about loyalty. The one I have picked is not loyal at all. Loyal when it is most beneficial. Absolutely a henchman. Absolutely a second. Absolutely, you know, does the bidding of the leader there, but is also ready to step up and take that lead spot and screw over anyone along the way. And for some reason, that's why I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Starscream.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, like, the cartoon starts and he's the main henchman, honestly. Yep. Like, the main lackey for it. And gets all the blame, gets none of the glory, will do anything, you know, serving Megatron. And then you get all these little teases of him saying stuff off to the side or behind Megatron's back. You're like, all right, what's going on here? And then, of course, the movie just pushes it over, and you're like, oh, my God, you've been building to this the whole time.
Yep.
And it just makes him, because you got three or four fighter jets there that all look the same, that just have different paint, different colors on them, but they're exactly the same. And yet I know that Starscream design immediately.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't hurt. That's the same voice as Cobra Commander either. You know, that's a little bonus for it usually. But he should just be the number two, the lackey. There's so many of them, especially in, you know, 80s cartoons and all, like we were saying earlier for He-Man, just to go out there and look foolish. You know, have the bad guy, have the good guy defeat you and you look like a joke and no one really takes you as a true evil threat. But Starscream just kept pushing at it and pushing at it and sometimes defeated everyone and got so close to victory a few times and would just always get knocked right back down and have to be at Megatron's side yet again.
Yeah, I love Starscream. I'm just do you remember the name of the actor?
Oh God, no. I mean, I can look quick.
Because he's also the voice of Cobra Commander.
Yep.
Christopher Collins. Yeah, I think so. Let's see here. Looking it up. Christopher Collins. Oh, yeah. He was Cobra Commander in G.I. Joe, the animated series, and Starscream in the Transformers. Unfortunately, died in 1994. But, man, I love that guy's voice as Starscream and Cobra Commander. But, yeah, like you said, he was a good henchman. And Megatron trusted him enough, because when he transformed into a gun, it was Starscream that was shooting him.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you know, that's an excellent point.
So yeah, he as much as he shit on Starscream, he also, I think, had a lot of confidence in him as well. But yeah, that was cold in the movie when he lets Megatron float seemingly to his death.
And it, you see, and the crazy thing is, you realize I shouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah.
Clearly that's what he's going to do. Clearly that's what he's been going for the whole time. Why am I shocked that this happened? I guess it was shocked that it finally happened.
Yeah. Because Megatron was just too tough, and everyone was just too scared of him. But yeah, he saw his chance, and he went for it. All right, so for my number one, I thought you might have went with a Star Wars one, so that's why I didn't want to. That's why I didn't want to step on any toes. So my number one, I went with Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Ooh.
And I would say he's a henchman to the Emperor, because he's got such a cool backstory. Like, I mean, Vader and Grand Moff Tarkin are also henchmen to the Emperor, meaning that they report directly to the Emperor. But Grand Admiral Thrawn, you know, like, he was this, you know, brilliant alien tactician. He was discovered, you know, he was thrown out by his own people, the Chiss Ascendancy. He was found by the Empire, brought in. The Emperor recognized something in Thrawn, let him go to the Academy, even though aliens weren't permitted in the Academy. He was the only alien that was part of the Imperial Academy. And through his own brilliance and confidence and everything else, he rose to the rank through the ranks quite quickly and became one of the Emperor's Grand Admirals, a rank that I believe in the original Thrawn trilogy, there was originally 12 Grand Admirals, and he was the 13th. And the Emperor sent him to the Unknown Regions with a fleet of Star Destroyers to basically bring order, bring the Empire's order to the Unknown Regions. And then when, after Return of the Jedi, Thrawn, you know, word gets finally gets to Thrawn that the Emperor's died, the Empire's in shambles, and everyone's, you know, scattered, Thrawn comes back and takes control of the Empire. Not because he wants to be ruler or anything, but because he's a loyal member of the Empire. Like, he's loyal to his Emperor. Even though his Emperor's gone, he's taking back control of the Empire to destroy the New Republic in the name of his Emperor, even though he's gone. And you know, he's written so brilliantly. And I love that they're bringing him into a new Star Wars, that we're going to see a live-action Grand Admiral Thrawn, probably in the next season of The Mandalorian. Who's going to be played by, I'm drawing a blank on the, it's the same guy that does Grand Admiral Thrawn's voice in Star Wars Rebels. I'm going to look it up. His brother was in Rogue One. He was the guy that, Jyn Erso. Is it Mads Mikkelsen? Mikkelsen? Is it
Mikkelsen sounds right.
Okay, it's not Mads Mikkelsen. That's the guy that was in Solo. It's his brother, Lars Mikkelsen. Lars. He's the one that's going to be playing Grand Admiral Thrawn. And man, he's got a good voice. He was in, was it the third season of Sherlock? He's been in House of Cards. Yeah, he was Grand Admiral Thrawn in Star Wars Rebels. And he's going to be doing the live action version. So I'm super excited to see what they do with him. Like, in the new continuity in Star Wars Rebels, Thrawn's a little bit different. Because in the original Thrawn trilogy, he gets killed at the end of it. Spoilers for something that happened 30 years ago. but, you know, he's alive and well in current continuity. And he's pretty much the same character, just a few differences. He was still a Grand Admiral. It's just the events of Rebels has kind of taken him out of it. So I'm assuming he's going to be doing what he did during the Thrawn trilogy, where he comes back to take over the remnants of the Empire. And yeah, to me, he was just, he was a great henchman. You know, he the Emperor saw something in him and he went with it. So yeah, that is our top five henchmen. So coming up in an episode of the Pop Culture Pub, we're still going to be talking about bad guys. Because on our next episode of the Pop Culture Pub, we are doing Best of Bad Group/Organization Edition. So we're going to be talking more about, groups of bad guys versus just a henchman. So that is coming up sometime this summer. But before we go, let's play that little game of where we can find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right, you can find me across most social medias at Mask Library. MaskLibrary.com is the home blog. In addition to this podcast, I also have, well, it's on hiatus right now, but the House Show podcast over at the Retro Network, where we pick a retro wrestling event to watch. And then that has now, while that's on hiatus, morphed into Hellions Talks, which is me doing one-on-one interviews with podcasters, bloggers, comic creators, and whoever else comes up here in the next few weeks.
Nice. Nice. That'd be awesome. All right. Well, I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to download or listen to this podcast. We appreciate any feedback you can give us. Please leave a review on iTunes or at podbean.com. We also like to hear from you. You can contact me, Chris. I'm the producer of this podcast, by email at chrislock1701@yahoo.ca, or contact me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at chrislock1701. Check out Jason's blog at www.nerdylifeofmine.com. You can also, our other co-host, Ragnar the Trader, you can see what he's creating at ragnarthetrader.com. I would tell you to go check out my blog, but I don't do a lot of blogging these days, but I have a blog. It's randomnerdness.blogspot.com. That was a misprint on my part. But I have been focusing more on being an admin of the following Facebook groups. Be sure to check them out and become a member. We have a group called the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. It's a companion group to the Pop Culture Pub. There's the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk for fans of Marvel Comics, the Marvel Comics character. I also have a group called Outer Spaces, which is a group about space and space entertainment. And I just recently created Lockhart's MOTU Facebook group. It's a group devoted to He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. So that they're all on Facebook, so be sure to check them out. And, yeah, I'll ask to join, and I'm sure I'll let you.
But all right. I was going to say, lots of cool pictures and images and stuff on all of those.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I focus on with those groups is, because I go on Pinterest a lot, and I see a lot of cool shit on there that I want to share with the world. Especially when it piques my interest, and my interests are the Hulk, space, you know, Masters of the Universe, pop culture stuff. So yeah, be sure to check that out for sure. All right. Well, this was Geek Fallout, our summer 2021 episode. Thank you for giving us a listen. We will be back with more Geek Fallout in the fall of 2021. And stay tuned on this network for more episodes of Trek 1701 and the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Kevin Decent, my co-host, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking time to listen to Geek Fallout. And we will see you again in the fall.